For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today is Saturday, November 6th. Facebook and its parent company, rebranded as Meta, are still dealing with what's been called the worst public relations crisis the company has ever experienced. Leaked documents, internal research, and ex-employees testifying to Congress with concerns have led to accusations that Facebook puts profits over people. So today, we're hearing from a different former employee who spent a decade with the company. Katie Harbath was the public policy director, and she says the leaked documents, now known as the Facebook Papers, are only part of the full story. She's giving us an inside look at the company's culture and later weighs in on the shift to the metaverse. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, where we provide all the day's news in 10 minutes. I'm Erica Mandy. It's now time for today's Special Edition Saturday. Hi, Katie. Thank you for coming on the Newsworthy.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So first, just overall, how would you briefly describe your experience working at Facebook?
It is the most fascinating job that I've ever had. The most chaotic, the most relentless, but working with some of the most amazing people that I have that are trying to work on really hard problems. It was also, you know, a very stressful and hard when you are, particularly the last 5 years of me working at the company, realizing how much work that we had to do to improve the integrity of the platform, but only so many hours in the day to actually do it.
Would you say anything different when I asked the question, how is the culture there when you worked there?
I would. I mean, I guess the culture of the company has changed a lot since I was there for 10 years. And, you know, at the beginning, it was very flat. It was small. You could really take on projects like me picking up and being able to do international elections work based upon something I pitched to the company. I really think is only stuff that you can see happen when a company is smaller. And I think today, between a combination of the company getting bigger, the leaks that were even happening before, the whistleblower documents, and COVID have really changed the culture of the company to start to be a lot more closed off and not necessarily as open with their own employees.
So you brought up the whistleblower. Let's talk about that. Facebook whistleblower Frances Haugen testified to Congress that she believes Facebook prioritizes profits over the well-being of its users. In a nutshell, how does that claim jive with your own experience at the company?
My own experience at the company was that the trade-offs I and the meetings I was in were a lot more around balancing the freedom of expression versus the harm that speech can potentially cause. And then particularly you add that in the political context, which makes it even more complicated. I was never in a conversation where it was kind of a question around revenue or anything like that. But these are really hard trade-offs that the company does need to face. And I think one of the things that the documents are helping to do is bring more to light what those trade-offs were, what the company is prioritizing. And I just hope that people do keep in mind these sort of trade-offs, because it's not just really about how much money the company is making or not, but it's also about some of those fundamental things of speech versus harm.
Do you have any examples from your experience of a situation where you felt like that was a question?
Yeah, I mean, look at any one of the decisions around President Trump and some of his posts. And, you know, the first one that was a really big question was December of 2015, when then candidate Trump put up a post around banning all Muslims from the United States should he win. And that violates Facebook's community standards. They didn't at this time have the newsworthiness exception or anything like that. And we were really struggling with, and I wasn't in the final conversations on it, but in talking to my boss and others around the right for people to hear what those who want to represent them have to say. And political speech is some of the most protected speech from the First Amendment standpoint, versus the fact that it does violate our community standards. And what does that mean? And that was just a precursor to many additional trade-offs that were pieces of content that had to be weighed that ultimately ended up in his deplatforming.
How closely have you looked at the so-called Facebook papers, these leaked documents that have come out more recently? And what stands out the most to you within those documents or the ones that you've looked at?
So I've only been able to look at the ones that have actually, been released. I've talked to the reporters and been reading all of the coverage and everything on it. And some of it is very familiar to me from my time at the company. And I think it's important to look at these documents as when Facebook is doing their decision making, it reminded me of the information gathering stage. There's a lot of research and a lot of suggestions and ideas and stuff that come from all parts of the company, from researchers to engineers to policy folks to our legal teams. It was reminding me of somewhat of the time and place going back in time. I think the docs go as far back as 2018 in some instances of where we were in these time periods of trying to build a lot of this work up and things of that nature. And it's reminding me of some of the tough conversations that we had to have and the prioritizations that we had to be doing in that. And I think, again, overall, I think this has really sort of elevated the conversation that people are having around what impact Facebook has had on democracy, on elections, on our society as a whole.
Do you think that some of the criticism is fair?
It's absolutely fair. I mean, I've been spending a lot of time trying to think back to some of the things that we did, the decisions I was a part of and everything in terms of would I do things different in hindsight. I'm still honestly working through a lot of that myself, but I think it's always fair to criticize and look at a company and question where they are, again, making their decisions, where they're choosing to put their time and resources and the decisions that they made. But I do think, again, it is also important to make sure that as we are doing so, we do understand the full context, what those decisions were, the research and the information that was available to them for those. That is one thing I worry about the documents is that they are pieces of that, but they're not necessarily the full picture of what those things were.
I would imagine some of the bad PR takes a toll on morale at the company, or does it?
Oh, it absolutely takes a toll. I think one of the most difficult things is day in and day out, month over month, year over year, is going and trying to work on some of these problems, knowing there's a ton more to do, but that, you know, you're trying to do what you can and with the resources you're given. And you're constantly kind of being criticized both from outside the company, but also inside the company. Like, colleagues are pretty hard and tough on this stuff as well. And so it can take a real toll on people who are trying to work on these problems. Things like the leaks and the whistleblower can make people less likely to trust their colleagues, less likely to want to put information out there and have honest debates because they're worried about it appearing in the press. Some of this stuff, you know, it's work on countries that if people's names are put out there, they could be in some real risk for their own safety. And so it makes a big change, not only to the morale, but to the culture of the company.
Still ahead, Katie Harbath says Facebook is not ready for upcoming elections. We're getting into Facebook's influence on politics. Plus, she shares how the shift to the metaverse follows a familiar pattern for the company. That's coming up. But first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Before I started The Newsworthy, I worked for more than a decade in traditional TV news, and I saw a lot of sad stuff in person every day. It's a big part of why I left and started this podcast, not only for myself, but also for others who felt bombarded by too much sad, alarming news. And I realized if we're not careful, any stress that we face in our lives repeatedly can lead to unnecessary anxiety. But thanks to therapy, it doesn't have to. And BetterHelp offers professional counseling that is both convenient and affordable. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist in a safe and private online environment so you can connect from the comfort of your home. BetterHelp's counselors specialize in a variety of areas, including stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, grief, self-esteem, and more. I want you to start living a happier life today. And as a Newsworthy listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/newsworthy. Join more than a million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/newsworthy. This episode is also brought to you by Ritual. Do you think you're getting all the nutrients you need in your diet? Research shows probably not. That's why I love knowing I'm supporting my health by taking Ritual vitamins every day, which, by the way, have research to back them up. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin, for example, was formulated by exhaustive research to help fill nutrient gaps in the diets of women ages 18 plus. And Ritual has a vitamin specifically designed for everyone, women, pregnant women, men, and even kids. I trust Ritual enough that I've been taking their vitamins so long that I've needed three different versions of it. I've taken the women's multivitamin, the prenatal vitamin, and now the postnatal vitamin. I love that I can trust the traceable, non-GMO, vegan-friendly ingredients as well. So whichever Ritual vitamin is right for you, try it. Because Ritual is offering the Newsworthy listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Just visit ritual.com/newsworthy and turn healthy habits into a ritual. That's 10% off at ritual.com/newsworthy. Okay, now back to my conversation with Katie Harbath. One of the things that has come out through Facebook's own research is that the algorithm for the news feed steers users to misinformation and divisive content. Do you think that's true? And who's responsible for the algorithm? Is there a chance that something could change?
There's always a chance that something can change. The algorithm is tweaked on a constant basis. The news feed, there's not one omnipresent person who is sort of controlling the news feed and the algorithm. And I think there's a lot of teams in there. And there's actually three different algorithms that are impacting your news feed on Facebook. There's one around the content that you've chosen to follow, the friends you follow, the pages you like, and deciding what content you see in your feed. There's one of the content that's recommended to you based upon those likes and interests. And then there's a third around the ads that you're shown. And so we need to make sure that we're looking at all of those things when trying to think about potential solutions. I am really nervous about 2024 because we're not only going to have a US election that year, but elections in India, Indonesia, Ukraine, Taiwan, Mexico, the United Kingdom, and the European Parliament. And that collection of countries has never gone to the polls in the same year before. And I don't think we're ready. I don't think Facebook's ready. I don't think governments are ready. I don't think civil society is ready. And so while we do need to keep looking at in the past and what decisions Facebook has made to help us to think about what we do in the future, I do think we really need to start turning our attention to that now and thinking about what do we need to put in place to be ready for the next 2 or 3 years.
And that begs the question, how much power does Facebook have over things like politics and other aspects of our lives?
I mean, Facebook is certainly a place where a lot of political conversation happens in the United States and elsewhere around the world. Campaigns find it valuable for gathering email addresses and in the United States for fundraising. But I think it is important that, you know, they alone are not a part of the full ecosystem when it comes to politics. And so we shouldn't just look at this of like, if we get rid of Facebook or make big changes to Facebook, that it's necessarily going to fix our politics. We have to look at how that all works together across the broader internet ecosystem, but also the broader media ecosystem as well.
Facebook is changing its corporate name to Meta. It's apparently to put the focus on the metaverse, which, if people aren't familiar, it's essentially virtual and augmented reality spaces where people can go and hang out, such as an avatar that goes into a work meeting. What do you make of the name change and the future of corporate Facebook?
Every 5 years ago or so, Facebook has done a big pivot. In 2012, it was the big shift to mobile. In 2017, it was the shift towards community and a lot of the integrity work that was part of. And so this is a little bit, you know, on time and on brand in terms of wanting to continue to pivot and looking towards the future of where a lot of this will go. I do worry about this potentially moving focus off of trying to fix some of these problems on the family of apps and only shifting gears towards like what's next and what's in the future. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned in building the metaverse and trying to build it safely. But I certainly hope that this doesn't mean that there's going to be resources taken away from trying to solve some of the other problems that are already happening.
Facebook just recently said it would get rid of all of its facial recognition data. Does that surprise you? And what do you think is behind that? And what does that even entail?
To be honest, this is a little bit outside of my depth of what I worked on at the company. I think it's a pretty big decision. I mean, deleting a billion pieces of data from people who, you know, facial recognition on the platform has been around on the platform for 10 years. So it's a pretty big change, I think, for them. You know, it could be an indicator of them trying to start to take steps again to show people of how they're trying to think through some of these, the products and stuff that they build and the balances they're trying to make in terms of privacy and stuff like that. But again, it also too is there's a difference between announcing something and then actually implementing it and understanding what the impact of that is. And I think that is one thing that we're still trying to figure out. Is it going to make people use the platform less? Does it actually, you know, increase privacy? Does it encourage other platforms to not do facial recognition, you know, like your Apple iPhone, right? You use your face to unlock it and stuff like that. So I more wonder of like what the impact of it will be, both for Facebook, the company, but then also for the tech industry at large.
Final question for you. Do you think the government should get involved? And in what way?
The governments absolutely need to get involved, both, you know, in the United States and around the world. I think that we need to look at this twofold. One, I think the international community needs to come together more around combating some of this bad legislation that we're seeing. Freedom of the Net and by Freedom House just had a report about a month ago that showed 48 countries are considering regulation. And unfortunately, many of those are problematic and will actually suppress minority or opposition voices. And then in the US, I think that, and even in Europe and other places, where I would like to see focus is around things such as transparency, getting researchers more data in a privacy safe way, ways to increase competition through things like data portability, but then also looking at, you know, the power that somebody like Mark Zuckerberg has, where he's really has nobody to hold him accountable. You know, he can't be fired. And I think that really doesn't sit well with people, and they would like to have a way so that he does feel like there's a bit more potential consequences to some of the decisions he's making.
All right. Thank you to Katie Harbath for sharing her insights. That'll do it for us today. Be sure to check out the Newsworthy Monday through Friday for our daily news roundups, where we bring you the day's news to know in about 10 minutes. Until then, have a great weekend.